Welcome to Get Over It, the Intuitive Transformation Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We've got a show tonight that is important to a lot of people because a lot of people are experiencing this, and this is about physical pain. We'll be speaking with Sarah Ann Shockley and talking about her new book, The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living with and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. So if you are having chronic pain in your life, this show is for you. But more importantly, if you're living with someone or know someone who is experiencing chronic pain and you're not, this show is especially important, not only for you, but for them. Okay? Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back, but the real question is, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your M&Ms, The Men and Money Book, and Masterful Choices, The Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. Now, my clients say that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, on my website, and that's MoniqueChapman.com. According to the data from the 2012 National Health Interview Survey, 11.2% of American adults, and that's 25.3 million people, experience some form of pain, often at severe levels, every day, and have for the previous 3 months. A 2006 survey by the American Pain Foundation found that the vast majority of pain sufferers feel that they have no control over their pain and that it severely impacts their well-being and ability to enjoy life. Of those surveyed, 77% reported feeling depressed. My guest tonight, Sarah Ann Shockley, is the author of The Pain Companion. In the fall of 2007, she contracted thoracic outlet syndrome, which is a collapse of the area between the clavicles and first ribs, and she has lived with debilitating nerve pain ever since. She has been a columnist for the Pain News Network and is a regular contributor to The Mighty, a 1.5 million member online community for those living with chronic illness and pain. She lives in San Francisco Bay Area, and you can visit her at her website, and that is thepaincompanion.com. Again, thepaincompanion.com. Welcome, Sarah, welcome.
Thank you so much, Monique. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
And how important it is to be talking about this. As you're saying, so many people are living with pain or living with people who are in pain. So it's really, really important.
And what I, as I shared with you before the show began, I, suffer from fibromyalgia, which is a very interesting type of pain. But I'm not familiar with what you are suffering with. I know nerve pain is horrible. That's part of fibromyalgia. But tell us more about what you're going through and how you contracted it.
Yeah. So thoracic outlet syndrome, as you said, is a collapse of the clavicles and the first rib between the area between there. So it's a structural thing. And what happens is there's a large nerve ganglia, there's a major artery veins, and a large muscle that goes through that narrow area. So when you have a structural collapse like that, everything gets squeezed. So you get a lot of pain, nerve pain, And you also get muscle pain, and your circulation is affected, and it affects the whole body. So what happens is your arms, a lot of times people get tingling and numbing in the arms, shooting pains in the hands, and the neck is very painful. It's when I first started out with this, I could barely turn my head right or left or up or down, so it's almost like it freezes up. What happens is the tissues get very swollen and the nerves mm-hmm. get very inflamed, so it's a lot of burning, a lot of deep aches. You feel like you have the flu all the time, and it's very miserable. And you lose use of your arms and hands, not completely usually, but you lose your strength. You lose your ability to grip, and they're mm-hmm. very painful, and you can't carry much of anything. I went to see a thoracic surgeon in San Francisco who said that I should keep my hands near my waist as much as possible. Well, you can just picture that. With your hands next to your waist,
impossible.
What can you do? You can't really do anything.
Walk.
So, you know, it's basically everything you do with thoracic outlet syndrome with your arms and hands makes it worse. It actually mm-hmm. exacerbates the inflammation. So you're really in a tough place in terms of how do you heal this thing? Because just about everything you do makes it worse. And it didn't lend itself well to manipulation. Some conditions work well with alternative therapies mm-hmm. Like chiropractic and acupuncture and things like that. But this did not. Everything I tried pretty much made it worse. And there's no real, if you have it lighter than I had it, I have a very severe version of it. There mm-hmm. is some physical therapy you can do and help relieve it. But my version of it, for some reason, I got the super deluxe version. I got it on both sides of my body. Most people get it on one side, and uh-huh. I got it on all three levels. Most people get it on either nerve or the veins, or the muscles are most affected. I for some reason, I got it on all levels on both sides. So for me, it was extremely debilitating. It still is. I still have it, but I've uh-huh. moved through a lot of the worst, most acute pain, and I've learned how to live with it quite differently. So I'm in a much better place than I was a few years ago. And we'll talk about, you know, all that and how I got there and in the course of our conversation.
Okay.
So I know that there's a lot of listeners out there that are dealing with maybe not this exact condition, but something mm-hmm. that is definitely affecting them deeply.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to talk about your exact condition for a moment longer, the thoracic
sure.
outlet syndrome.
Sure.
How did you contract it? Because I was reading in your book how you contracted, and so many people out there in the workplace or either at home, they're not aware of how almost easy you can bring it into your life.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's very important to talk about that aspect of it. I contracted it I'm almost 6 feet tall, so I'm a tall-framed person.
Uh-huh.
Long-framed person. And I was working on the computer on a not just a laptop computer, but a mini laptop. So I was working for a private individual. It was non-ergonomically set up. It wasn't, you know, we didn't know it was how to set it up correctly. And I was working on kind of a mini keyboard. And I did a lot of research for him. So I was on the computer a lot. And what happens when you work on the computer a lot, and it is something for people to be aware of, especially when we're working with these smaller screens and we're doing a lot of texting and things that cause us to kind of contract in the upper body. But a lot of times right up near the collarbones, we're sort of allowing that to collapse in when we're working a lot on keyboards. And mm-hmm. that's how I got it, was from prolonged use of a keyboard that was too small for me. But my neurologist says any laptop keyboard is dangerous. So, you know, you really want, if you possibly can, to get a keyboard where the space is as wide as possible between the hands, and it's hard to find them because they're not made that way. So you want your hands not to be cramping in towards each other as much as they often do. And you mm-hmm. want to keep your shoulders kind of back and wide, is what I understand. Of course, I can't, you know, give perfect medical advice because I'm not a doctor, but this is what I was told by my neurologist. Mm-hmm. And you want to get up and move around and kind of pull your shoulder blades together in the back to open that up. So you want to keep the sternum from collapsing, that whole front area, top area. Because what happens is some people get this same condition I have from car accidents too, from a sudden impact where that mm-hmm. area collapses. but many people get it slowly over time from computer use. So it is something to be aware of and not to treat lightly. Really take care of yourself that way.
Well, it sounds like, and again, I'm no doctor, or at least not a doctor, a medical doctor, let's put it that way. It sounds like even if you utilize your cell phone a lot, that you could develop this condition.
Yeah, I think texting is kind of become a bit of a problem. I can't speak to that because that's not how I got it, but anything mm-hmm. where you're kind of allowing the top part of the body to collapse over time, you know, for long periods of time, you do want to be careful. And my neurologist says that although we haven't heard the term thoracic outlet syndrome a lot, it's becoming much more prevalent because of our use of little keyboards and screens and the way we kind of bend over things. And so the other thing is to try to have your screen more at eye level, not bending your neck down all the time to look at screens. So yeah, mm-hmm. texting would probably be a culprit if we're not careful.
Wow. You just think about all the millennials who can't unglue themselves from their phones.
I know.
A different show.
Yeah.
your book, The Pain Companion, why is it so different from other books? I guess I'm fortunate in a sense that I get a lot of books to review, and I pick a lot on pain because I have pain. And, you know, you read the book and you might get a tidbit or two that might help you, but your book is a bit different. Why is that?
Well, for one thing, many books on pain are written by medical professionals. They're written by people who work with people in pain, and often not by people who are in pain or have mm-hmm. been in pain. Some of them are. But a lot of them are, their approach is medical. Their approach is physiological. It's how can I give you a therapy or a technique to heal you, to get through pain. So they might mm-hmm. be about yoga and pain, or it might be about some kind of physical therapy and pain. Sometimes it's about working with belief systems in pain. But mostly it's how do I get you out of this pain? And if you do my technique, I can help you be pain-free. And also a lot of books work with specific conditions and specific symptoms. And they have you know, some of them are very, very good. A lot of times, though, I've talked to people that have found no help from anything. Mm-hmm. So what I talk about and what isn't talked about too often is what happens to the person who can't get out of pain. What happens when you do everything, you do all the right stuff, you're going along with the physical therapy and whatever it is that you're given to do, and it's not moving. So not necessarily, I don't start with how do we get out of pain, but I start with how do we live with what's here already. Mm-hmm. And that's a really different approach. Most of the time when we meet pain, the first thing we want to do is end it. And that's really understandable, of course. But we're almost jumping past the journey when we do that. There is some kind of journey we have to go through when we meet pain. The way we respond to it, the way that we walk through it, very much affects not only our well-being from day to day, but also how fast we move through it. Uh-huh. So I talk about how to be with it first, and that paradoxically seems to be a quicker way to move through it. It's kind of like grief. You know, when people meet loss in life, we often have a habit of trying to get them to forget about it, to not mm-hmm. talk about it, to not be with it, to not talk about the person who just passed. And that's not actually usually the best way to get through grief. Often the best way to get through it is to be in it and allow yourself to feel the loss and to be someone who lets that person talk about the person they just lost and really listen. And often when you're in grief, you want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. So I've found physical pain to be quite similar in the sense that people need to be in it, in the sense of feel it. You don't have to feel the full extent of it. It's not like you can't use painkillers. I'm not saying that, or medication. But to allow yourself to be in the journey of it and to be mm-hmm. with it before it will move on. It's a very strange way to think of it a lot of times in our culture because we're so pain avoidant. But and with pain, particularly with chronic physical pain, comes a lot of emotional pain. And I talk about that a great deal because we're not really addressing that. It's not something that doctors are necessarily either aware of or equipped mm-hmm. to address. But when we're in physical pain, and I'm sure you know this, for any length of time, there's an incredible feeling of loss, of sadness. A lot of us feel very alone and isolated in our pain. Mm-hmm. it becomes pretty clear to us very quickly that the people around us don't really understand what's going on for us. They don't understand what it's like to be in pain. A lot of times they want us to hurry up and get out of it and, you know, what's wrong with us that,
yeah,
we're not, that we haven't, you know? Yeah. And also, you know, even in our New Age community that can be so supportive in other ways, there's this sense that, that things are supposed to happen quickly and that if you haven't gotten out of pain, it's your fault. You're not.
Yeah. You're just holding
right,
on to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're in denial or you're holding on or you must want some attention or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's not really helpful either to healing. So I talk a lot about the shame and the blame and the guilt and all of the things that come along with living with pain and how to mitigate them, how to work with them, how to release them, how to move beyond that. So first to understand that they're there and recognize them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, you know, we're in physical pain, we're, especially when it's acute, that's all we're noticing is the physicality of it because it's
right,
very in your face, as you well know.
Uh-huh.
And we don't always notice that we're in also emotional pain about it. So over time, if we don't recognize that aspect of it, we can slide into depression and despondency and hopelessness and helplessness and all of those things and really kind of end up in a dark well if we're not careful because we don't necessarily have the energy or the ability to look at the other aspects of living with pain. So trying to provide a way for people to be with that part of it and to also relieve it, which is really important and an important step in healing the physical pain too.
Right, and just not going into a negative tailspin about it,
yeah,
and staying in within that negative tailspin. Now you mentioned,
yes, exactly.
Yeah, because sometimes,
please,
it's so easy. Just, you know, you talk about the depression, you know, that you talk about in the book, and it's very easy to lose interest, not to,
mm-hmm,
do anything. Because first of all, if you're doing things and you express the pain, people say, as you just said, you're looking for attention, or you know, you're reaching out,
yeah,
in some way that's not appropriate. So you don't want to,
yeah,
do that, but at the same time, you kind of want to do something, but you don't know what it is that you want to do. So you just end up giving up, and then you're sitting on the couch looking out the window. And that definitely,
yeah,
leads to depression if you do it for an elongated period of time.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned, you know, getting out of pain and taking medications. Why are opiates bad? I've been put on several, and after, well, the third one, I think I stopped, you know, even taking the prescription from the physician. It was like, no, this isn't working for me. I don't want to be bombed out of my mind 24/7.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword, the whole medication question, because there are people out there, probably some of our listeners, who it's hard to function without some kind of medication. So I'm not totally anti-medication by any means, because I talk to a lot of people, especially since writing the book, who are dealing with pain and who can barely function. And a lot of us have kids and have,
mm-hmm,
to keep going. So there has to be a reasonable way to work with medications. But when that's all we're given, here's the solution, a bunch of opioids and go home, that's not really moving us beyond the pain. That is, you know, teaching us how to mask it and not necessarily work with it. So,
mm-hmm,
again, it's a balance. It's not that you can't ever take medication, but not at all, but we want to work with it judiciously. We want to work with it, if we possibly can, as a stopgap, as something that we're working with as we move through and beyond it. And they are dangerous, and,
mm-hmm,
and it's really important to be aware of what we're doing and how we're using them. And so what I'm offering, too, is ways of being with pain differently so that we're not quite as dependent on them. And when we learn how to be with pain differently, it often helps relieve it. And one of the things that I was starting to talk about a little bit, and that we should get in a little bit here, is when we meet pain, we automatically fight it.
Uh-huh.
You know, the first thing is stop it, end it. This is no good. Pain should not be here. We have this idea in our culture that pain should not exist. You know, we just shouldn't have it. And,
uh-huh,
especially in our modern day and age, nobody should be in pain. And yet, look at all the people in pain. So there's something,
wrong
with
levels.
That. Many different levels. The two don't match up. And I think one of the things that's going on is our whole pain paradigm, if I can call it that, is not helping us any. And that is, we meet pain, whether it's emotional or physical. We say, we label it as bad and wrong. It's a mistake. We must have done something wrong. Maybe it's a punishment from God. Maybe it's karma. Something that we perceive as wrong and bad and a mistake or failure. And so the first thing we want to do is get out of it. And of course we want to get out of pain. Of course we do. It's painful, really unpleasant. But we're almost trying to bypass the healing aspect of getting out of pain by trying to just stop it, kill it, end it. So I've started to really look at that. When I was in pain and I couldn't, you know, nothing was helping me, I thought there's got to be another way to work with this. Uh-huh. And I realized that the way that we perceive pain as an overall negative, totally negative, is then affects the way we respond to it, which is that we clamp down, we tighten up, we pull back, we freak out, we get scared. All of that affects us emotionally and physiologically. It's uh-huh. hard to heal when you're clamped down and you're tightened up and you're freaked out and everything, you know, and we're afraid of it.
You don't heal.
It just, right. it clamps it into place, basically. Uh-huh. And then that affects our experience, which then affects, you know, it's kind of a vicious cycle. And it affects how long it takes us to heal or if we ever heal. So I thought, well, let's go right to the beginning and look at pain itself, how we perceive pain. And I realized over time of working with this that pain, I mean, it's almost obvious, but we don't really think of it this way. Pain is a signal. It's a messenger. It's part of us speaking to us. It's part of our body saying, help, you know, I need uh-huh. something here. And mm-hmm. instead of punching it and pushing it away and trying to kill it, how about if we... You know, yes, we may need to mitigate it. Yes, we may need to soften the edges so we can be with it a little bit, certainly. But let's, instead of pushing against it and resisting it and fighting it and saying this is all wrong and this must be a terrible mistake, say, okay, pain is here. Don't like it. Don't want to be in it with it. But what is it trying to tell me? Uh-huh. Well, how do I need to change in order to move through this? What is it asking for? So a lot of times we don't ever ask the question, what is pain asking for? We don't think we should give pain anything. We just need to get rid of it. But it's actually, you know, yeah, go away. But it's asking for attention. And that's what's asking for attention, is pain itself. And the kind of attention we give it is often not very productive in terms of healing. So how about if we shift the way we pay attention to pain? How about if we, again, ask it, what does it need? What can I give to you, pain? How can I be different with you? And it might say things like, well, I need you to slow down. I need you to be softer. I need you to think of me as a ally, not as an enemy. Mm-hmm. And these things that seem, they are very simple, but they're very profound in terms of how they shift the way we are with pain and with ourselves. And so when we begin by shifting our perception of pain, it does shift the way we respond to it. The body starts to relax a little bit. All of a sudden, just that shift begins to allow a lot of physiological changes. We begin to relax. The blood flows differently. Things are allowed to begin to heal. We're not clamping down on it. We're letting it, okay, let's let pain have a little bit of room and space here, which sounds like a terrible thing to do. No, we're not going to give pain any more space. But that's exactly what it needs, is the space to be where it is, and then it actually moves faster.
Yeah,
it seems like a paradox, but it works.
Yeah. Well, when I was reading your book, what I got out of it within the first 20 pages or so is that pain allows us the opportunity for self-reflection. And not self-reflection
Sure.
in a negative way, but to look Yeah. at ourselves in our totality and to let go of things that are no longer, or people that are no longer
Yeah.
serving us, and to say no to the things if we really don't want to do it. I mean, if you can't move your body and somebody asks you to come across the street and have a cup of coffee, if you really don't want to and you're in pain, you're going to say no.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's
Yeah.
not worth that effort. So it allows us to, you know, like I say, have a come to Jesus meeting with ourselves, you know,
yes.
and to get into our truth. And I think that's part of what you're saying when you're talking about sitting with the pain and embracing it.
Yeah. In a way, it's being with it differently. It's allowing it to be, in a sense, we take our power back when we're with pain differently, because when we're fighting pain, it has the power. Anything we're fighting actually has the power in our lives. And so it's not giving in, it's not giving up. I know there's a new therapy that says just put up with it and pretend it isn't there and ignore it. I don't really ascribe to that one. I don't think that's really, if that helps you, do it. But I think in the long term, it's not going to help us move through it. But if we can imagine that pain is beside us rather than right in front of us, like we take the boxing gloves off, we're not going to fight, but imagine it's next to us as a partner, as an ally, all of a sudden we've taken our power back and pain is with us rather than against us. That's huge. Just that shift is huge. And then being with pain and sort of sitting with pain and finding out what is it bringing? What's the message? What do I need to do to change? And yeah, pain is a really difficult teacher, but it can be a teacher. It can be a mentor. It can be sometimes the only way in our lives that we're going to get a certain kind of message. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those of us that believe in and understand, you know, about spirit and the soul, we're on this human journey for other purposes than just to have some things and to have some experiences. There's a soul growth thing that's going on here. And sometimes pain is the thing that is trying to guide us back onto our path or off of a path that isn't so great for us. So because it stops us. It says, no, we're not going in that direction. And sometimes it's the only way we'll listen because it's so demanding. So to learn how to listen to it can be really helpful. And to find out, as you were saying, maybe some things need to be let go of. Maybe you need a different job. Maybe you need an entirely different career. Maybe you need to look at the way you are in relationships to other people. And often I have found pain asks us to look at our relationship to ourselves.
Exactly.
And to spirit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a very big, you know, I mean, there you are, especially with something like I had at the beginning, could barely do anything, barely go anywhere. Making a cup of tea was painful. So I was sitting there, couldn't read anything, watching movies wasn't even something. Everything was too demanding, too much noise, mm-hmm. too difficult. It wasn't on the computer. So there I was with myself in my little house, just sitting or walking or pacing or taking a walk. That was it. And boy, you're really with yourself. That's all you've got. And you kind of have to face, who am I actually in this life? What am I doing? And when pain takes things away from you, you also, as you were saying a few minutes ago, you really learn to understand what your priorities are, what you want to say yes to and what you want to say no to. And you have to define those things. It's not easy. I'm not saying this is an easy path or something that anybody would want to go through. But when pain shows up in our lives, as far as I can tell, it's asking something of us. It's asking us to look at things, look at ourselves. And when we do that, the sooner we do that, the sooner we can move beyond it, I feel.
Yes, and folks listening to this is not about making a judgment when you're self-reflecting, okay? This is about looking objectively, you know, at yourself if you can, and then just saying, okay, well, factual, A, B, C, D. And then after you come up with your A, B, C, D, then deciding what it is that you want to do with it. Folks, we're speaking with Sarah Ann Shockley. She is the author of The Pain Companion, Everyday Wisdom for Living With and Moving Beyond Chronic Pain. You can check her website out. That's thepaincompanion.com. The book is available everywhere. And, you know, folks, go get a copy because this is something if you're in pain or you're living with someone in pain and you don't get where they're coming from, this book will give you a complete new understanding. So, Sarah, when you talk about creating, you know, again, the relationship with the pain in the body, and you're deciding that you're not going to do the opioids or you don't want to keep them to a minimal, it's important, I feel, to pay attention to the other pain medications that the doctor will give you. For my fibromyalgia, the doctor prescribed Cymbalta, and the way he sold it to me, because he knows I don't like to take a lot of medicine, but the way he sold it to me, it was like, okay, this will work. And you know what? 3 days later, I was completely out of pain. However, 2 weeks later, the Cymbalta had me so crazy with all the side effects of the Cymbalta that was actually worse than the physical pain that I was trying to eradicate. And then on top of that, you couldn't stop the medication immediately. You had to taper off, okay?
Yeah.
And still, 6 months later, I'm experiencing the side effects of the drug. So it's going to be very important to pay attention and to be knowledgeable going in. Just don't buy into something because some physician says that it's okay.
Absolutely. And whatever we can do to eliminate or cut down on any of those pharmaceuticals, honestly, I'm all for that. And if people, I couldn't take them. I for nerve pain, there isn't much that's really helpful. I did try three of the leading nerve pain drugs. I had to as part of my, to show I was trying to heal. I don't know why that shows I was trying to heal, but that's the way our system thinks about it. Uh-huh. And the side effects were really miserable for me too. And I was a single mom. I couldn't afford to be nauseated, dizzy, foggy, unable to, a lot of us with pain have sleepless nights anyway, but the insomnia got even worse, headaches got even worse, the side effects were not. And to be kind of spaced out, having the pain was better for me than risking being spaced out, especially driving a little person around. So, so you do have to make those kinds of choices. And what we're talking about is how can we be with the pain and work with it in such a way that it begins to just release, even if we can release the worst of it sort of around the edges of it, that's huge. So any change that we can see that we can make on our own is huge because it shows we can make more changes later. Any change means, I can do something with this. So a lot of what I work with too is awareness, and I work with breath and with what we talked about earlier, sort of allowing the pain to be there, which is very counterintuitive. And yet when you allow pain to be where it already is, it's already here. So, so pushing against it is like not helping. And what we tend to do, as we spoke of earlier, is we get very tense and tight, and that actually makes it worse. And it's almost like we're trying to push the pain out of our body, sometimes even using our breath to push against it or holding our breath to try to stop it. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty counterproductive because we need to keep breathing. We need to keep the air moving. We need to keep the circulation flowing to help heal. And part of what I found worked for me was to begin to notice my breathing and to begin to allow myself to breathe. Deep breathing didn't work for me. That was actually painful. But to just notice how often I was holding my breath, and notice how often I was trying to almost push against the pain with the breath, and to just gently allow myself to breathe more naturally and more, a little more deeply, but more noticing that to let it flow, to stop holding it and let it flow. And that also led me to work with pain and breath in the sense of, well, what if I let pain breathe? Which, we can't not let it breathe in a sense because it's in our body, but feels like almost a separate entity, pain does, and we try to kind of cut it off and sort of push it away. I thought, well, what if I let it be where it is and imagined breathing with it instead of against it? And immediately, sometimes that makes the pain almost seem more present with you at first, like you're more aware of it. But then as you breathe with it and allow it breath, I have found, and many people that have tried this have found, that it does begin to soften, even just a little bit around the edges. Uh-huh. And another way is to imagine that giving pain more room to breathe. Instead of trying to squeeze it down and contract it away, you say, okay, pain, I don't really like you here. It's not like we're liking it, but let's see if we can just allow you to have a little more space to breathe in. And just imagining that, allowing pain to have more space, oddly, it's like pain begins to relax. It's like it is part of us that has been clamped up tight, and it begins to relax. It's like we're saying, it's okay for you to be here, pain. It's not the same as saying, I want you to be here, but we're saying, it's okay for you to be here. And that, it sounds, it may sound a little strange if you haven't tried it, but it has some physiological effects. It has emotional effects. And it begins to allow the pain to do whatever it needs to do to begin to heal. And part of that is to give it a little space. This pain is the aspect of us or the part of our body that is trying to heal. That's what pain is. It's a signal that something's trying to heal.
And it's so really Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so we don't want to clamp down and stop that. You know, we're trying to stop that. When we clamp down on it, we're actually stopping, in a sense, we're trying to stop the healing without realizing it.
Yeah, we're blocking ourselves.
Allow it to move. Yeah. Yeah.
Blocking ourselves, which is not always a good idea. Okay, so we've talked about the person who's in pain and ways that they can, you know, attempt to alleviate pain for themselves. But what about the person's, you know, inner circle, their orbit, if you will, of the people that are around them, and they don't get it? They'll say, well, yesterday you could get up and walk to the door. Why can't you today? Or you know, why can't you do this? I want to go to Universal. Actually, someone tell me, I want to go to Universal Studios, and I want you to go with me, and you'd better be there. And I'm like, well, no.
Right.
So how do you get them to understand, you know, like, if you touch me, you're going to send me to the stratosphere.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really, this is very challenging for people in pain, because it's, mm-hmm. we're living in a different world. People that are not in pain and have not been in this kind of prolonged pain, it's very hard for them to understand. They want us to be better. They want us to be normal. They want us to move beyond it. And again, it is part of our pain paradigm that since it's not okay to be in pain, you shouldn't be in pain that long, is kind of the attitude mm-hmm. that other people have. You should be out of it already. So mm-hmm. we have to deal with that. It's difficult. One of the things that a lot of times what people do is they actually give the Pain Companion book to people that are around them to help them understand, this is how it feels like. Sometimes it's really hard to articulate it for ourselves, so that can be useful and helpful. But to what I recommend is to ask the person to just listen for a moment, to not try to make you better, you know, because one of the mm-hmm. things that happens with people that are not in pain is they want us to be better, and then they have lots of advice for us. And they imagine that we're not better because we just haven't done the thing, whatever the thing is that, you know, the exact right treatment, the exact right supplement. So mm-hmm. it must mean that, you know, we need some advice. So we have to gently kind of educate the people around us that every day, every moment of every day, we are working as hard as we can to heal, and that being in pain is not linear. It's not something that happens in a fashion that is very understandable even to us. It doesn't appear the same way every day. It moves all over the body. It's very unpredictable. And we have to live with that. And we ask them to be patient with us, because unfortunately they kind of have to live with us that way too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the things is to also, I think what we sometimes don't do is we don't always ask for help. And it sounds like we're going to turn people off by asking for help. And we certainly don't want to overburden a couple of people and ask them, only a couple of people, to help us all the time. But when we say, you know, could you, like for example, I can't lift things very well, I can't carry things very well. When I ask the people around me and I say, would you please carry this for me? It's painful for me, and I would really like your help. That actually helps them in a way to contribute to your well-being, which mm-hmm. most people want to do. But it also explains to them in a graphic way what you're going through. If we grin and bear it and we try to hide it and we pretend everything's fine, the people around us are going to agree with that because they want it to be fine.
Right.
It's not that we walk around, we go, oh, I'm in terrible. I'm not saying that, not at all. But just in a neutral tone of voice, and hey, would you mind opening that door for me? That would be really helpful for me. It helps remind our friends and the people around us, oh, yeah, that's right. But so sometimes they also just forget, because it's been a while and they want to forget. Because, you know, you might ask for help in ways that that would really help you, and also it reminds people, oh, that's right, this person is not exactly, you know, feeling great. It's very hard to communicate. I do have some things on my website, write-ups for ways to talk about pain and mm-hmm. ways to talk to doctors about pain. Doctors are another group that don't always get it, as we know, and may not believe us.
And I'd like to delve into that a little bit more, that they don't believe you. Because when I first went to the doctor about pain, the first step was to send me to psychiatry. And I'm like, you know, I'm not freaking crazy. Okay,
wow.
So
yeah.
No, I am not going. This is real. What can we do about it? And they don't, it's like, they don't want to
help? It's really hard, yeah. Part of that, I've really thought a lot about this, and a part of it is it's very cultural, it's our medical culture. It's also, I think, sometimes male-female, but not always men get this too, this being disbelieved. It has, I think, a lot to do with the way that we are, where we set up doctors to be a demigods. You know, they're supposed to know everything about, we've set that up in our culture. It's not a personal problem with a particular doctor. It's the way they go through many, many years of schooling, and they are told as they go through all these years of schooling that they know things, that this is how you know things. And unfortunately, when they come out the other end, they're often very specialized in what they know. They don't necessarily know about how the whole human being works together. It's very physically oriented. Mm-hmm. My research on medical schools has shown me that they don't have, most of them, I haven't found any yet, that have a course on pain management or what pain is or how to deal with pain. So they've come through this whole schooling thing where the body is like a machine or a thing that you see in pieces. So they might specialize in the nervous system, or they might specialize in the heart. I even talked to a wonderful, lovely cardiologist about thoracic outlet syndrome, and he couldn't understand why my feet would be in terrible pain if the upper part of my body was the part that was collapsed.
Hello?
And I said, well, that's what we're dealing with. And he was a lovely, smart man, very kind person. And I said, well, I do understand that we have one nervous system, one central nervous system. So I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but it makes sense to me that if I have a terrible collapse that's squeezing the part of the nervous system on the top part of the body, it would affect the whole thing. And he kind of looked at me and went, he's never thought of that. Like, seriously, never. And so we're dealing with that all the time where we've got, It's our system. Our medical system is so fragmented that, and there's something about it. It must not deal with emotions. It's like a taboo. Doctors aren't allowed to really feel for their patients. And so we have this very strange way of dealing with when someone comes up with something that's not understandable directly through you've broken something or you've got a disease I can see. But it's a pain. I can't see pain as a doctor. I don't know where it's coming from because I can't find the physiological beginnings of it. Very much with fibromyalgia, they don't understand it. They don't know how it happens. They don't know. So a lot of times people come up with pains, and if the doctor can't see it and they can't see a direct physiological reason, they tend to just discount it because they're trained to see things that are noticeable physiologically. And many, many, many people have pains that are not, you can't trace it that way. But it doesn't mean it's not physiological. It doesn't mean it's in your head. It's very, very, very present in your body. So we have a problem with being believed. And when doctors can't understand the pain, then they, instead of saying to themselves, here's a patient that I don't understand their pain, maybe I should look into this more closely. Maybe I should ask them more questions. Maybe they know more about their pain than I do. Maybe they know more about what's going on in their body. Maybe they can just do an opportunity for me to learn about this condition. Instead, unfortunately, the large majority of them, as far as I can tell, tend to say, must not be real.
Exactly.
Must not be there because I don't get it. And so, so that's... Unfortunately, that's what we're dealing with, and so many people tell me that, that the doctors just don't get it. And again, part of it is that they're not living in pain all the time because they wouldn't be doctoring if they were living in a lot and lots of pain, so most of them aren't dealing with it, and don't understand how it affects the whole person and that it can travel around the body and that kind of thing. And then part of it is that they're equipped to work with just pure medical, physiological things and not things that don't, have a direct...
Exactly.
You break,
they can't see it.
They can't see it. They can't see the
work with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So unfortunately, instead of us changing our systems, because so many people have pains that nobody understands, we instead send people away with either nothing or some, you know, we'll try this and see if it works.
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead.
No, that's it, please.
Okay. Well, the one thing that you talk about in your book is imagining pain's form. And when I read that, I took it a little bit different than what you wrote, and I said, okay. I looked at my pain for that particular moment, and I said it had X form. And I literally, in my mind, changed the form. I changed the size, the color, the weight, and the pain dissipated. Now, it did come back, but I, worked with it to shift it because this is what I wanted to do. I had something I wanted to do. I was in pain, couldn't do it in pain. And I shifted the form. It was almost like asking the pain to step out for a moment. Okay.
Yeah, that's definitely a way to work with it. I would also encourage, especially since you noticed that it came back, mm-hmm. is to work with the form it shows up in originally too. So allow it to be in the form. And it might be ugly, or it might be, when I first did this, I'm sure you read this, when I thought, well, I'm going to meet pain. I was trying all these creative ways to be with pain since nothing was working. And I got to the point where I said, being stoic isn't working, ignoring it isn't working, and I'm not going to live like this the rest of my life. Can't do that. So I'm going to do all these creative things and face pain differently. And so I invited pain to come to the door, so to speak, like you did. And I opened the door in my mind's eye, and for me, what was standing there, I thought I was going to see some fiery demon or something, but for me, what was standing there was Hermes, or also known as Mercury, the messenger of the gods. And that's when I got, oh, of course, pain's a messenger. Oh, pain is a positive force. Oh, wait a second. Pain has a purpose? And that's when I started going along that line of thinking. It helped tremendously. So along that line, my mind showed up sort of in a positive form, but a lot of ways in the middle of the night when I was having terrible pain, I felt like I was being, tortured on a medieval torture rack and, all those other things. And you can go into past life stuff with it if you want, and that's fine, whatever works. But be with the pain that's here now. Don't use that as another way to sort of escape it, kind of be with what's here now and say, okay, why are you showing up now this way? Mm-hmm. And so certainly changing the form is a creative way to work with it, but also allow it to show up the way it shows up. I would also recommend, say, okay, it's showing up and it's really ugly, it's in my face, whatever, and just like, okay, hello, well, what's that about?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of letting it be the way it is. So just see what that's about too. And I don't even know what that would look like. Everybody's pain is custom made for them. We have our own, it's really, it's us speaking to us. Really, it's part of us speaking to us. And that's also something that really helps us to remember. It's us. It's the part of us that's in pain speaking to us. It's not a foreign entity. It's not an enemy. It's not attacking from the outside. It's not even attacking. It's just saying, hello, hello, hello.
I need attention.
I need you to pay attention to me. I need you. Oh, and instead of beating me up, could you be soft now? Could you maybe send me some nice loving thoughts? And another way, to work with this, and even in a sense play with this, even though it sounds weird to maybe to say playful, being playful with pain doesn't seem like an oxymoron, but to get a little less heavy about it, and to just imagine pain is sitting in a chair opposite you, your pain, your very own version of whatever it is, and just talk to it and just let it talk back to you and just use the active imagination and whatever form it takes and notice your relationship to it and notice whether your relationship to pain reminds you of anything, like a relationship to somebody else in your life that maybe needs to shift, or notice, the way you are with pain is the way we are with the parts of us that are hurting. So in other words, if we're trying to kill or eradicate or get rid of something like pain, we're trying to kill or eradicate the parts of us that are asking for help and hurting. And when you think of it that way, you kind of go, oh, ooh, maybe I want to do that differently. Maybe I don't want to just, So, and what you did was perfectly wonderful. So, you know, use all of the creative things you can come up with, anything that helps. And anything that helps that we can do on our own, that we can take more power back for ourselves in working with our pain and not be at the mercy mm-hmm. of doctors that just prescribe things that maybe do or don't help, or not at the mercy of somebody who just says, I don't know, so go away, or you're, you know, and that does happen to people.
Yeah.
And to just, and to always validate ourselves. If there's pain there, there's pain there.
Yeah, it's so important.
In your mind, it's not, it's there, it's real. Mm-hmm. So anything that I'm saying is not meant to minimize anyone's pain at all. It is real, it's there, it's very difficult, it's insistent, can be the most difficult thing you've ever done in your life to work with pain and to move through it. I don't want to discount this journey at all. It's very, very difficult. And it can be rewarding.
Yeah.
Learn a lot, you know.
Yeah,
it's not the path we want, but it can be very rewarding. You know, once we're on it, we're on it. So
yeah, well, you know, I chuckle when you say that because for the longest I was, you know, fighting the pain. It's like, okay, well, like, this isn't working. What can you do? And then I looked at it and I said, okay, so why is it, you know, here? And I came to a conclusion about that, and then I realized that I was taking care of other people more than I was taking care of myself. My body wanted some attention, you know, much needed attention,
absolutely.
Healing, that type of thing. And has the pain gone away and stayed away? No, but it, you know, it gets better.
But you learn, it gets better. And again, we're not talking about, I mean, I'd love it. If there was an instant overnight cure for pain, somebody would be a gazillionaire.
But would be.
There isn't one that we know of, you know, that everybody can mm-hmm. use. And I do believe in miracle cures, and I do believe that people could wake up pain-free. That can happen. Of course it can happen. But meanwhile, for many of us, it's a slower journey, and it's something we live with every day. And so how can we find more well-being while we're in it? How can we be with it differently and regain some joy in life? You know, one of the things I say is don't wait for pain to leave for you to start living your life again. You've got to mm-hmm. find a way to live with it. And I know that sounds like, I don't want it to be that way. I don't want it to be that way. I don't want it to be that way either. I don't want to be with pain. But while it's here,
exactly.
I want to still have joy. I want to still have love. I want to know I can still love people even with the pain. I can still, whatever I can find to enjoy, even the littlest things. You know, you really learn to appreciate the littlest things when your life has kind of been reduced to small things. Mm-hmm. But don't give up. Find those little things. And in fact, that's part of the learning, is to find the preciousness on those moments with your children. So, you know, when you can actually find the energy to read them a story or whatever it is, or to just be with them, and to know if you have kids and you're in pain, know that it's you they want. You know,
right.
It's not, when we worry about, oh, no, I'm not being the right parent, oh, maybe, you know, your kid wants you whether you're in pain or not. So just mm-hmm. be as present as you can be and love them as much as you can love them, and don't wait for any of that because that time is passing. Just be in your life. Even if you have to be in the pain, too.
Mm-hmm. But you can do it.
And then that actually does, and it does help it move. I've found a tremendous amount of movement since I've started working with these things. So I have found it does move.
Okay. Well, you know, there's one thing that you have in your book that caught my attention, I absolutely love, and I might use it from time to time, and that is look for the gold in the ashes. Now, what did you mean by that?
Well, you know, I was a single mom through this, and my son was about 11 when I contracted thoracic outlet syndrome, and there was many things that I couldn't do with him anymore. I mean, at the worst, I couldn't even play board games. He had to move the pieces for both of us. I mean, you know, I could barely grasp anything with my hands, so that meant no bike rides. I was teaching to swim, no swimming. We'd been on a trip to the Galapagos. We were invited there by friends. That was wonderful. I thought, oh, we'll go on a trip every year. I'll save up my money. That went out the window because I couldn't travel. So all of these things I wanted to do with him, I felt like I lost his childhood in that way. It was incredibly sad for me. And also I felt really ashamed and guilty about it because I felt like I wasn't being the mother I could be. And yeah, that happened. I did lose a lot that I could have done with him. I would have loved to have done with him. Camping, backpacking, all these things. Just, that's gone. I couldn't drive for more than 10 minutes at a time. So, mm-hmm. and yet, what, you know, I can look at those years as lost. All of those years are lost. Or I can say, wait, I was still alive. I was in mm-hmm. pain, but I was still alive and I was still with him. And even though we couldn't do the things I wanted to do, other things happened. I had to learn how to ask for help. I had to learn how to write for scholarships for Boy Scouts and all these things. But we did a lot more quiet things together rather mm-hmm. than the active things. And that deepened our relationship. And he, I felt bad about this at first, but he had to help a lot. He had to help me with the laundry. I couldn't do the laundry alone. I couldn't carry things. I couldn't pull it in and out of the washer dryer. So, and he had to go shopping with me. Every time we shopped, he had to do the shopping. The house was dirty most of the time because it was just too much. But any time we did vacuum or clean, because it was, you know, I didn't want to ask him to do everything. But, you know, he had to do pick up a lot. And being an only child, sometimes only children don't ever really learn how to think beyond themselves because they just don't have that sibling experience.
Right.
And the gold in the ashes for this was that, you know, he's now almost 22. He's a very wonderful young man. He's very kind. He is not typical only child. He is able to appreciate and feel into other people's experiences. He's sensitive to other people. He seems to have a very good core and center in himself. Mm-hmm. And I think, wow, you know, not that I would have chosen this way for that to have happened, not at all. But how interesting that he found something, he found that he was important in a way that a lot of mm-hmm. kids today don't get to find because we create chores for them. We say, you have to do this, you clean the dishes, but they know inside themselves that it's not a life or death thing, whether they clean the dishes or not. It's not something like where we have to go out and build a pen for the pigs because we live on a farm, you know, where they actually... Mm-hmm. do something that makes a huge difference. Kids don't have that. And yet he had that because he really needed to help. And again, I wouldn't have organized it that way, but that's some of the gold in the ashes is he's more mature than most kids his age. And he didn't, mm-hmm. he doesn't feel like he missed anything. He did, you know, he went to Boy Scouts and he did camping with them and all his Boy Scout friends. And it's just, you know, I missed it because I didn't get to do it. But he had that experience.
You
know, he did it. He had his life.
Yeah.
And I was there as much as I could be. And I learned how to be, when I was with him, I learned to be as present as I could be and as loving as I could be rather than, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes, oh, I have to do this thing with my kid. You know, I turned that around and I was very grateful for every moment I had with him. So mm-hmm. it taught me how to be with him differently, too. So that's what I'm talking about is really looking for that and the ways that you learn about yourself. And I learned how to really prioritize and I learned a lot about who I am and who I am on the inside and how much strength and resilience I have in there because man, I went through a lot and I'm still here.
Yes. And you will continue to be here for a while, but you know, Sarah, the one thing that I pick up about your son is that he's extremely self-sufficient. You know, he can take care of himself. And a lot of 30 and 40-year-olds can't do that. Okay.
Yeah.
So that experience.
Well, he absolutely taught him that because he moved out on his own at 19. I didn't kick him out. He just said, okay. And he's been supporting himself since then. And he's mm-hmm. in school part-time and he works part-time. And I don't have much to give him anyway, but he, you know, because I'm living on disability, but he learned, you know, and it wasn't a resentful thing at all. It was like he was very proud of himself and off he mm-hmm. went and he's happy and he's doing stuff. So yes, absolutely. It's strange, but you know, your kids will learn something from it if you allow them. And I would also say, speaking of kids, you know, a lot of people ask me, how should I be with my kids? I would say, you know, you don't need to tell them the nitty gritty of what you're going through because it's too scary for them. And you certainly do it in an age appropriate way. But I also wouldn't hide it. In other words, you need to let your kids know that something's going on and you're going through something because they will know that. And it's mm-hmm. scarier for them if you don't tell them anything. because they get it. They know something's different when you're in pain. They can feel it, and kids are very sensitive. So you want to tell them that you're working with something, and sometimes you're not always feeling that great, and they can help you in this way, and give them ways to help you, because that helps them not have as much fear if they feel like they're helping you.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, there's ways to work with your kids, and it doesn't have to be so awful, even though it is obviously really difficult for everybody.
Yeah, but interesting life lessons learned, and, you know, folks, you do come out the other side and you're better for it. I'm not saying the pain goes away, but, you know, because we all have lessons, but you come out the other side and you're better for it. Well, Sarah, our time has gone so quickly. I really appreciate you writing the book and sharing your experience and willing to share it with the world to help heal the world of the physical pain that is going through right now.
Well, you're so welcome. So happy to be able to make whatever contribution I can to shifting things around that. So I so appreciate being here and being in our listeners and for tuning in. And it's great to be able to share this and have this conversation. So important.
Yes, it is. So to Sarah and the listeners, thank you for being with me tonight as we collectively get over pain and learn how to manage it. The divine in me honors the divine in you. And if you're looking for a different life, a better life, intuitive consultations by me are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the podcast. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself and make that call, 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of managing your pain. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.